All right, welcome to the Retro Game Club podcast, season 2, episode 17, which is also episode 49. And with me, as always, someone who did not have his source code leaked, Hugh.
Yes, yeah. No, when you put it all out for free, I guess I self-leak everything.
Yes, yeah. So what's going on?
Let's see. I started the Final Fantasy VII remake this week.
How many hours are you in, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe I've played it for about the past 4 nights. So let's go. What's 4 times 90 minutes? So probably like 6 hours in. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like it. It's very cinematic. I mean, if you think you're getting like an old school Final Fantasy game with modern graphics, that's really not what this is. So far, it's a pretty kind of lockdown world. I don't know, like, if you get to a part where you can, like, take on optional missions or go explore a little bit more. But at least at the beginning here, it's pretty much like, hey, we're going to do this mission, and there's only one path through the dungeon kind of stuff. But it's not bad. I mean, it looks amazing. Like, it's visually really outstanding. And, like, the whole world looks really great. The only maybe kind of bad visual thing is, like, when you're walking around the first town area, there's only like 6 or 7 maybe NPC sprites, so you kind of keep seeing the same people over and over again, which is a little weird.
So it's like the early Grand Theft Auto games, kind of
you keep running into the same people, but overall I like it, you know.
I was just gonna say, I heard if you put the subtitles on as you walk by people, it's kind of funny. It subtitles only the words you hear. So I guess it's like a strange kind of thing that everyone should try out, the way they did that.
Yeah, so I think the subtitles are on by default.
Okay.
I don't recall turning them on. It seems like they're always on.
Okay.
But yeah, as you walk by people, the problem is they all have like one line, essentially. It's like any, you know, NPC in an RPG, right? They have their one line. So every time you walk by them, they say the same thing if you walk really close to them.
What's the fight mechanic like? The battle mechanic?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's supposed to be like an action mechanic, but you know, the problem is like if you play actual action RPGs like Ys, right? Mm-hmm. It is not anything like that.
I mean, that's what I was asking, yeah.
Like honestly, if they could just pay Falcom to get like the Ys 8 engine and just use that instead of what they're using, it would be a pretty huge improvement. Because it's sort of like not quite turn-based but not quite action. It's sort of like in between. Like you have to hit a button to swing your sword, so it's a little bit of action in there, but it's not like you're in full control of your character either. It's similar, it kind of feels a lot like the Final Fantasy 15 battle engine.
Okay with that.
Yeah, it's kind of similar. Like Final Fantasy 15, I was joked, was not, you know, press X to win, it was hold X to win. And that's kind of how Final Fantasy 7 Remake works. It's pretty, I guess I read that it's like based on the modern Kingdom Hearts engine. I tried one Kingdom Hearts game and just did not understand the appeal. Again, everybody can like Kingdom Hearts. I just was like,
not for you. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
So knowing me, and I bought this game already, so I'm going to play it, but knowing me, knowing I'm not too into JRPGs, do you think I'll like it? I love Ys.
You like it? Yeah, see, it doesn't, again, the combat is nothing like Ys.
Okay.
But it's more action than like, you know, an old school turn-based RPG. You might like it. I don't know. Did you like the original Final Fantasy VII? Did you like the story and the characters?
Yeah, I mean, I hung out with a buddy and watched him play it, you know, so I had fun that way. I didn't really like it playing it by myself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe, I can't think of what else the control's like. I mean, the closest thing I can think of control-wise is Final Fantasy 15, except Final Fantasy 15, you also have, like, a huge overworld to explore in you know, you're just not there yet in 7. Maybe 7 opens up later on, but yeah, 15 had like that huge overworld, and then it like locks you into like the first half of the game is open world, and then the second half of the game is really locked down. It's like the opposite of how most RPGs are.
Interesting, huh? So well, it's been getting really good reviews.
Yeah. Let's see. I got the TurboGrafx Mini in the mail today.
cool. What's your take so far?
So far, it's not bad. I will say, like, one, Mini is kind of a misnomer because it is relative to, like, the Super Nintendo and NES Classic and especially the PlayStation Classic. This thing is huge. I mean, it is much bigger than the other Mini systems.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever designed the connectors, like the HDMI and the power connector, they really went out of their way to, like, prevent accidental use of the product. Because, like, first of all, the first HDMI cable I plugged in couldn't fit into the slots. It has, like, that backing, you know, the TurboGrafx has the backing that covers up the back port that you can slide off.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, like, thread the HDMI cable through that thing. And if you have an HDMI cable that's not the one that came in the box, it doesn't fit. So, like, I basically had to take that thing off to hook it up. And then the power cable requires, like, a degree in engineering to connect. But once you get through those hurdles, like, the system boots up right away. The controller is really great quality. I mean, the controller is, like, it's not, I won't say it's identical to the original TurboPad. It looks almost identical. But it's actually, it's like they took the best, like, the aesthetics and everything and kind of tightened up the controls a little bit. Like, I actually like this control pad better than the one the TurboGrafx used to come with. And it has, like, a 9-foot-long cable or something insane. So that part's great. The thing that's weird is, like, the default display settings for games is, like, some weird aspect ratio where the games all look funny. And then when you change it to, like, old school aspect ratio, everything looks great.
Are there any CRT filter effects or anything?
There is. I did not particularly. I tried it with Bonk's Revenge, and I didn't like the way it looked. I prefer without the filter. I did try.
Was it, like, scan lines or what?
What was that?
Was it scan lines or what?
Yeah, it was like scan lines. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically, I had scan lines. And then, like, I tried EastBook 1 and 2 just to check out the audio, and it doesn't sound like compressed, terrible audio. Sounds like the original CD audio without much, if any, compression. I'm not super sensitive, so I don't know. Maybe someone else knows the difference. I really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's got all the kind of things you'd expect. Like, you don't have to go over... It supports the old school, you know, press... select and run to reset the system thing. So that's how you get back to the menu to then, like, create save states or change settings or change games. I tried Dracula X on it too. That was pretty good. I think I did Bonk, Ninja Spirit, East, and Dracula X so far.
And it's a button to switch between Japanese and English games, right?
It's in the menu. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so in the menu. And then it's kind of cool, like, when it when you start a CD game, it actually, like, has a little animation of the CD spinning and plays, like, a CD spinning sound effect.
I love that stuff. I love those little touches.
Yeah.
And when you boot up a Hue card game, it has an animation of it putting the Hue card in.
Yeah, right? It has a little animation of it, so. I mean, overall, I like it so far. I just, I was going to hook it up to my main TV, but then it turns out I have to, like, move some stuff around because this thing is so big. Like, it's, I should get it, you know, get a picture of it next to an actual TurboGrafx 16. I mean, it's like, it's not as big as an actual TurboGrafx 16, but it's much bigger than the other classic systems.
Huh.
I really was expecting, I guess I was thinking something like the little, you know, like the Japanese one, like there's a little box, like the PlayStation Classic. I mean, I should have ordered the Japanese one, I guess. I don't know. I guess we sell stuff in America, you have to make it huge or else we won't buy it. I don't know.
Well, the thing is like, yeah, the PC Engine might look cooler, but for us, at least for me, the TurboGrafx, the look, that's my nostalgia, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I'll probably talk about it more, you know, probably pick some Game Club games from it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it, man. What have you been up to?
Yeah, so I took some time off work. That felt really good. Just got back to our house today, and I did some gaming on the road, and I came home today, and I was able to download and play Maneater. Do you know that game?
I heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Okay, yeah. So for people that don't know, it's a game that came out this week, and you play a great white shark, I think. You play a man-eating shark, and it's pretty much Grand Theft Auto, but you're a shark. And it's really everything I've ever wanted in a game. there's kind of some light RPG elements, and I highly recommend this game. I didn't get too far into it, but it's just a good time. You know, you're pretty much eating people and fish and turtles, and yeah, it's fun if you're into that sort of thing. And then, yeah, my TurboGrafx arrived, but I didn't have time to unbox it yet. That's something that I really want to, you know, wait till I have, you know, a good half day to play with. And other than that, just playing our game club games and, yeah, getting ready to go back to work tomorrow, so...
Yeah, I guess I got to go back to work, too.
But we got our last episode. We had a lot of news items, but a lot of them were not great, kind of throwaway. And I feel like we have a lot of great, really relevant news items this time.
Okay. All right, good. I see one throwaway one. So let's go.
Okay. So
see if you can guess which one I don't want to talk about.
Okay. So... story one, the G-Boy. It's a Wii/GameCube portable DIY kit. So you could buy this whole kit and mod a Wii to be portable. And this thing looks like it works pretty great. The controls mm-hmm. look pretty great. The screen looks fantastic. It just looks very difficult to put together. But
Yes. You definitely have to have a lot of skills to put this together.
Yeah, and a lot of tools like a Dremel and soldering iron and stuff like that.
Probably a backup Wii or two.
Yes.
Because you will probably destroy one. But I mean, the Wiis are really cheap right now. And the part that seems to break on Wiis right now is the CD drive. So I had the Wii that I got back in 2008, let's say I bought it. I didn't buy it at launch. Bought it a couple years later. And it's same kind of problem I had with the Switch, right? Where the game I wanted was Twilight Princess, but it was also on GameCube and I'd already pre-ordered the GameCube version.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to wait for like some other game to come out that I really wanted. But at this point, like the CD drive on that died. And when I was reading about it, it's a pretty common problem where I guess there's some mechanical thing where the laser, the head on it gets gunked up and you can take it apart and manually clean it. But like a regular like CD cleaner doesn't really work. You basically have to take it apart. And there's a good chance you might not get it back together. So instead I just bought one for, you know, $20-$30 on eBay to replace it. Because my kids still play a ton of Wii. But that's the thing. Like you can get Wii. I mean, Wii sold 100 million units or whatever it sold. I know that's an exaggeration. It might not be an exaggeration. I might be understating it. But they're pretty... And if there are garage sales this year... Who knows? Maybe there will be. Maybe it depends where you live. I don't know. Wii's pretty cheap right now. So yeah, if you're going to take a system apart, why not the Wii? It seems like they're kind of marketing this as like a way to play GameCube games more than a way to play Wii games though. Which I get because like a lot of Wii games, like there are some Wii games that are fine with just regular controls, but then other games, you know, the motion is very, very essential. You know, so.
And... You can only play on certain Wiis, you can only play GameCube, right? The later Wiis, you couldn't.
Well, the redesigned red one, but nobody has that. Like, I've never seen one of those except at Target, you know? Like, I've never seen one in anybody's house or in a yard sale or anything. So that was like, I compare it to like the Super Nintendo 3, right? the Sega Genesis 3, the Super Nintendo 2.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people have Genesis 1, a lot of people have Genesis 2. Almost nobody has that Genesis Model 3. And almost no one has the Super Nintendo Model 2 except for the guy that made the fake Chameleon system.
Yeah, or like the PlayStation Super Slim.
Yeah.
That's like the PlayStation.
Oh, yeah, I have that. I have the PlayStation Super Slim. All right.
I think this next one is yours.
Yes, absolutely. I actually forgot who the first one was. It was yours?
Yeah.
I feel like I was going to add it in too. So the first RPG developed for the Game Gear has never been released in America. It's called Eternal Legend, and it now has a fan translation. And this looks like pretty serviceable 8-bit RPG.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually really like the graphics in this.
Yeah. Yeah, I had not even heard of this game until I saw this ROM hack. Again, because it never been released in America. I'm not a huge Game Gear fan, so it just never crossed my mind. But obviously, if you're going to play this, you're probably going to play it in an emulator anyways, because most Game Gears today have pretty fried screens.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. We talk about Raspberry Pi 4 a lot, or Raspberry Pi in general. So this isn't like gaming specific, but there's a firmware update to the Raspberry Pi 4 where you can have USB boot. So you can basically boot it without a micro SD card. I don't know why this is preferable.
So because of speed.
Okay.
So, yeah, I put this on here because so many people use RetroPie and Laka and all that stuff. So, there's speed tests out there, not on this hackster.io article, but, you know, micro SD cards are just known for being slow. I mean, they're pretty much made for taking, you know, digital camera shots with.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, if you're booting up with a, M.2 USB 3 drive, it's going to be magnitudes faster. So, and also just more stable too. You know, I don't know about you, but for some reason, micro SD cards just die on me all the time.
Yeah, I've had a few go corrupt, and usually they're ones in my phone. So it's not like the end of the world. It means I have to like reload all my MP3s because I just as a rule will not keep anything resembling personal data on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even keep a contact list. It's really awkward when I change phones because I literally don't just keep any of the old. I don't keep contact. Even if I don't change phones, someone will text me and I'll be like, yeah. Okay, whoever you are. See, that's the thing. Like, when I set up Raspberry Pis for gaming, I always put the OS on the micro SD card, and then I get a bunch of these little tiny, low-profile USB drives that you can get between, like, 32 and 64 gig, and just have four of those, so you can have, like, almost like a disk array.
Oh,
so that's right. When I had the retro, when I was doing the RetroPie thing, I put four 32 gig, very, very small USB cards in. And now I have like two of them in my car instead.
Well, now you could just use a real hard drive, you know, get like a 2.5-inch SSD and get some real speed on there. But so I thought this was great. I always wondered why they didn't do this in the past. And, you know, most games are pretty small, so it's not, you don't really notice that much, but I think it's one of those things that once you get something that's faster, then when you move back to micro SD at some point, if you had to, you'd definitely notice it then. So I just wanted to throw that out there. It's still a beta firmware, so you probably won't see it for a few weeks or a month or so. And, another firmware update, the Sega Saturn Fenrir?
I would pronounce it. So this is a drive, this is the optical drive emulator for Saturn. If you want to remove the actual drive from your Saturn, right, and put this in so you can play images instead of having discs in.
Exactly, yeah. And this is one I haven't heard of before. We talked about the GDMU one, we talked about the Terra Onion one. This one we've never talked about. So, I'll have to look into this, but, this new firmware gives you, you know, a new, scrolling interface, a clearer font, and, now works with all pseudo loaders.
The interesting thing about this here is it's, I think it's cheaper than the other drive we were talking about. This one for the Saturn goes for, it's in euros. Wait, no, $101, it says.
Mm-hmm.
That's not counting shipping and stuff. But still, I think that's cheaper than the other ones we've talked about. And,
yeah, I think so, too.
I don't know, maybe we could get these guys on the show, man. They do a lot of, they sell a lot of different mod kits.
Yeah, how is this not this has gotten by me, so.
Yeah, they got, like, some RGB mod kits, see a GameCube one. Yeah, so GameCube to add SD support to the GameCube. So, yeah, a lot of cool stuff. You just have to, be kind of skilled, man, to do some of this.
I think this next article is yours.
I don't know. I don't have the notes open. Let's see here. Oh, when SimCity got serious, the story of Maxis Business Simulations and Sim Refinery. This is a very long read, so this is not like something you should start lightly. It is a very long bit about when the folks behind SimCity decided to get into the business simulation business and develop specialized sim games for different industries. It did not work, although it's the kind of thing that might actually work today. You know, like, people like these, like, super realistic industry simulators now. You know, sim truck driving, sim farming. I mean, stuff that, like, you're like, I don't know, managing a farm doesn't sound that exciting. But you can get a game for it. You can get a game simulating almost anything now, I guess. But this was, like, yeah, operating a refinery. And then it has... yeah, some, like, healthcare-related ones. It's just really stuff that you would not think of being a game, but they aren't really marketing it as a game. You know, it's more like a teaching tool that happens to be slightly more fun than traditional teaching methods.
And wasn't it, yeah, they said, like, Will Wright was pretty much saying, like, what are we doing? Let's just do some games.
Yeah. So yeah, that was I thought it was kind of a neat little thing.
Absolutely, yeah. I think this next one was yours too.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Pac-Man turned 40 this week, at least in Japan. And NVIDIA created an AI to generate Pac-Man levels in, I guess, as a tribute to Pac-Man turning 40.
So this is crazy. So I was actually looking at the wrong article. This one was mine.
Oh, good.
So, yeah.
Oh, I skipped an article. Look at that. I'm an idiot.
It's fine. Right. We'll go back to it. Okay. But so, yeah. So NVIDIA had their AI system, Volta, look at, watch 50,000 Pac-Man matches. And by watching those, it figured out how the game worked and it created Pac-Man.
Okay.
So, yeah. It's kind of hard to explain because it's kind of emulating Pac-Man, but it really just wrote its own Pac-Man. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, today they're writing Pac-Man. Tomorrow, you know, we're being used as batteries, I guess. I don't know.
Pretty much. So they're saying, you know, the whole point of this is, like, maybe in, you know, Grand Theft Auto 8, it could use an engine like this to create mobs of NPCs and stuff. So,
yeah.
Again, equally terrifying.
Well, yeah. I mean, imagine the possibility, though, of, like, you could take any city in the country, plug it into an AI, and it would just generate, like, a Grand Theft Auto game based on that city.
Yeah, that could be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I would pick, like, the smallest towns I could find. Because I think that would be the most fun setting. All right. So the one that is that I did put in the show notes... a company called The Future Was 8-Bit has announced a thing called the Mini Pet, which is a build-your-own Commodore pet kit. So it's a 6502 computer. It's very small, very low power profile, and it's used for hobbyists who want to build a Commodore pet today, as opposed to back in the day when you would, you know, order parts out of a catalog.
This is the prettiest PCB I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's white instead of green. That's kind of a... gives it like a wintry look.
Yeah, it looks like it's out of Star Wars or something. Yeah. Yeah. I really like this thing.
Yeah, this is another company we could talk to. I mean, these guys do some interesting stuff, too. But it's in stock right now. It's 205 euros, which... yeah, sounds like a lot, but... you're a huge Commodore enthusiast. First of all, you get a lot of stuff in this kit. It's not just like that one board. And yeah, I guess if this has been a dream of yours or just a hobby you enjoy, this is probably worth it.
Yeah, it's something that'll probably last for a long time, which is pretty important, you know.
And then they have a SD drive adapter that's an optional add-on for a few bucks more.
Is the next episode the one you're calling the throwaway? Or I'm sorry, the next
story, the one you're calling? Yes, that is the throwaway.
Throwaway?
Yes.
All right, let me read this one.
All right, good.
You can play the new Dance Dance Revolution in your browser right now. So I guess Dance Dance Revolution is retro at this point. But yeah, you could play it in your browser with... you can't hook a dance pad up to your computer. You use the arrow keys, which seems horrible. But I don't like dancing or really moving in general, so I never cared for Dance Dance Revolution.
I was confused why this was on the notes at all. Yeah.
Because
it's keyboard revolution, right? It's not.
Yeah.
You're not dancing. You're just it's typing of the dead, but with worse music.
Yeah.
With only four keys and terrible music. So there you go. Sonic 3 alternative intro puts Sonic the Hedgehog on a surfboard.
It's a very quick video, but it. Yeah, they found some footage of an alternate Sonic 3. I guess there was what's in this video, and then there was also like a top-down isometric thing that got scrapped, and then ultimately we got the Sonic 3 that we got. And I have a beef to pick with this video.
All right.
If you watch it, he's surfing, but that's not what a surfboard looks like. That's what a snowboard looks like. So it looks like he's on a snowboard in water. It's just, I don't know why that really bugs me.
That bugs you more than the walking hedgehog.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I don't know. I don't really have any feelings about this, but it's still kind of neat.
Yeah, it's neat. Not much else to say about it. So the Mr. FPGA kit, if you want to spend a little more money than getting a PC Engine Classic or whatever they're calling this thing, TurboGrafx Mini, you can get a Mr. Kit, which now has TurboGrafx 16 CD-ROM support.
Yeah, with the arcade card working as well. That's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about this before we started recording. It'd be really hard for me to justify spending the money on this because it's a very expensive, not very expensive, but I mean, the entry point is $300 for this, right? So it's more than buying a next-gen console at this point.
Assembly required at that price point, too.
Yes, assembly, yes. Much assembly required.
But, and yeah, I don't know. I'm going to get a Mister one day, but not yet. I just want to wait till... I heard the interface for loading games is still kind of... I don't want to say hacky. It's not intuitive. Now, that could have been updated by now, but I just want to wait till people kind of soften the edges a little bit, you know? Yeah, and it has mouse support for some reason.
Yeah, so I forgot that mouse support. I remember the Sega mouse. I assume someone will email us, but there was never a TurboGrafx mouse in the U.S., or if there was... It definitely was not in a store I worked at.
Yeah, I'm Googling this right now. What games? Okay,
well, it would have worked right offhand, like Loom, right? It would have worked with.
Lemmings, they're saying it worked with. And it looks like a lot of games I never heard of.
Yeah.
Princess Maker 2.
Again, I don't know if Loom was one of the games it supported. I'm just saying if I was to make a mouse for the PC Engine... Loom would be the first game I would make.
It wasn't in the list, but...
So the most obvious mouse game is the one that's not included.
It's a cool-looking mouse, too. Anyway.
Yeah, so we didn't get this. I'm going to pretty confidently say we did not get this in the U.S.
Yeah.
And with the list of games that it supports, I don't really see any U.S. releases.
We have an open source / leaked source code section
yeah
in our news
Yeah, source code releases, intentional and otherwise. EA is going to release the source code for some Command & Conquer games. This is a very un-EA-like move.
Mm-hmm. So it's Tiberian Dawn and Red Alert. Have you ever gotten into Command & Conquer?
No. I probably would like them, but I like Herzog's Why, right? And this is similar, much more complicated.
It seems like a big commitment, but I think I would really like it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if they're releasing the whole source or portions of it. It'll be curious to see. Because with a lot of these games, you know, they're buying engines or libraries or drivers from other companies. So I suspect they can't release the full source code because I would be shocked if, like, every single thing was written by EA in that game.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, this is, like, Microsoft has talked about this, why they can't. Like, they have certain products they can't release the source code to. Like, Microsoft, we're going to talk about Microsoft releasing source code in a minute here. But Microsoft has said, like a lot of people have asked about Microsoft about releasing the source code to Visual Basic 6. That's probably the request they get the most. Mm-hmm. And their answer is really, like, we don't own all the code. Like, we didn't write all the code for Visual Basic 6. There's big portions of it that, you know, were purchased from a third party or licensed or whatever, and that they can't release the source code to.
Mm-hmm. But it'll be exciting to see what people do with this. You know, the mods they create, this could create a whole new gaming scene, really, you know? So, you know, something that is pretty alien to me, like the whole Dota scene, and I forget what the new one's called. But yeah, so pretty exciting. And then about the same time, Microsoft released the source code to GW Basic.
Yes. So this is a cool one. GW Basic was, you know, I think a lot of people learned how to program in GW Basic back in the day. Mm-hmm. They are not going to accept contributions to it. No kidding, right? It looks to be almost entirely, if not entirely, written in assembler. And there are no build instructions. One article I read about this complained about the lack of build instructions. But I feel like given a couple days, I think I could figure out how to build this. Right? I mean, pick a file, build it, see what compiler errors you have. Mm-hmm. Change the order. Because it's all, most of the time, it's just about building the files in the correct order.
Yeah. I love that the first line is copyright 1975, Bill Gates and Paul Allen.
Mm-hmm. And somehow they managed to make the commit date 38 years ago. I don't know how you do that.
That's awesome. Well, they own GitHub now, so.
Oh, that's true. They do own GitHub. I guess they can make GitHub say whatever they want.
Could you imagine your boss coming up to you? Like, you're just some guy at GitHub, and your boss coming up to you and saying, like, we need you for something.
Yeah.
We need you to work late to do this. You're like, are you kidding me? But it might actually just be like some file that they had to edit, or, you know, a database entry or something. But that's funny. I did not notice that.
Yeah, I got to think of this. It's probably some really obvious way to do it. Like, you know, I think something in a previous episode, I've been talking about how, like, there are some Genesis games where you, even with a cart converter, you can't play them on a PAL or NTSC system. Like, they're PAL games that just won't work on NTSC and vice versa. Even if you hack the header to say it plays in all regions. And I was trying to think through, like, some convoluted way to figure out how they did that. And then I'm like, oh, that's right. The VDP register tells you what region you're in when you start the system. Like, you can just ask the Genesis, hi, are you a NTSC or a PAL system?
Mm-hmm.
And here I was like, oh, wow. Maybe what you do is you count the number of frames between, like, no. So I'm guessing GitHub has an option to set the date when you check in code. That I
Git itself has an option.
Git does not have that.
It's on Stack Overflow. How to commit to the past. You amend a date.
Okay. See? So nothing convoluted at all.
So that's our random Git section of Retro Game Club podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And
And then more Microsoft source code leaks. Xbox and Windows NT 3.5. I feel like we talked about the Xbox one before. That was fairly recent, right?
Well, we talked about the Nintendo.
The Nintendo one, right. Yeah, yeah. This is similar. So, yeah, that's where I got confused.
Yeah, very similar. This can't be used in anything, or Microsoft will come after them. But very interesting about the NT 3.5 leak, because a lot of that code is probably still used in Windows 10.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you can follow. There's at least one blogger from Microsoft that talks about weird issues in Windows that exist because of something they did in Windows NT or Windows 95.
This is crazy. Yeah, that's a big leak. Yeah, I don't know what'll happen about the Xbox, but whatever. It can't be in any emulator.
Yeah. Do not use that code.
And that's the news.
Yeah.
Our topic today, not an interview. So we've been doing a lot of interviews because a lot of people have been at home and had time to talk to us. But this time, since I've been playing my 3DS a lot, I thought I could talk about emulating on the 3DS. And this will probably be a pretty quick topic, simply because it's pretty simple. So on the DS, DSi, DS Lite, 3DS, 2DS, you can use what's called a R4 card. So if you just Google that right now, you'll come up with a lot of articles and stuff on the R4 card. And all this is a DS-looking card that you put a micro SD card into, and you copy their firmware onto it, their kernel, and you're good to go. You can boot. There's emulators that could come with it for, your Nintendos, your Segas, all that stuff, Atari. Or you could play, backups or downloads of DS ROMs. And it works great. The shocking thing about all this is the price of the cards. They're like $8 to $12. It's insane. And like I said, they work fantastic, but there is a catch. Mm-hmm. The first catch is that Nintendo is going after sites that sell these like crazy. So they're kind of hard to find right now. The second catch is if you buy the wrong one, there's a kill switch. So there's a few different types of R4 cards. There's the R4 Plus, the R4 Gold, the R4 Dual Core, the R4 Lite, and a few others. They're all almost exactly the same. For example, I just listed the R4 Dual Core. It doesn't have a dual core, and that's just its name, and really the difference is the color. Now, my advice is if you want to buy one of these, buy the R4 3DS Gold Pro. Anything you find that has a date after it, like 2016, 2019, 2020, anything that has a date after it, it's going to be a little cheaper, and it's going to be the exact same thing as the R4 Gold Pro, except it's going to have a kill switch in it. I have a Gold Pro and I have a dual core. Both still work. My dual core is 2019. It's 2020 and it still works. So I don't know when that kill switch is. Some of them are 5 years. I heard some are 2033. Mm-hmm. And I heard some are the year after you buy it. So there's a few clones out there. So it's kind of hard to know what you're getting. The funny thing is somehow you could still buy these on Newegg.com, which is a pretty reputable site. If you go with the Gold Pro, it's going to be a little bit more expensive, but you probably won't have to buy one ever again. So again, just try to find one that does not have a date in the title. The emulation on these things, I find, are pretty flawless because you have two screens. In by emulation, I'm talking about the DS emulation is flawless. with the retro systems, they're pretty good. I would say better than serviceable. So if you think about, you know, your not great emulators, let's say like the Nintendo emulator on the Dreamcast or the Nintendo emulator on the Nintendo 64, you know, for the EverDrive, those are serviceable. You could play Nintendo games on them, but it just doesn't feel perfect. You could just tell, you know, and even like a novice or, you know, someone that doesn't play retro games that much could still tell it's just not the same. On the 3DS, I really don't get that with the R4 card. I think it's pretty impressive. And because you have the two screens with the retro stuff, you know, sometimes you'll have like the logging happening at the bottom and a few other things like that. So these are so cheap, you know, you could go on eBay, you go on Newegg, buy one. Even if you do get one with the kill switch, hey, it's like $12, you know. And the next one I want to talk about is the Sky 3DS card. This is much more expensive. It used to be widely available. Now I'm really only seeing it on eBay and some sites in Hong Kong. But yeah, so the Sky 3DS only plays 3DS games, to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried doing anything else with it. Like I said, it's a bit more expensive. I'm seeing them used for like $60. You could actually get them with like a 3DS for, God, I'm seeing like $150, which is actually a really good deal. That's used. But the best way to use these would be like Gamefly or something. Or if you own some games and you just don't want them to break, you know, back them up, put them on here. These seem to work great for me. My problem with it is there's no menu. Mm-hmm. So like the R4 card has a menu. You know, you select your game, you play it. The Sky 3DS card, there's two buttons on the bottom of it. So let's say you have 50 games on there. You have to hit that button so many times till you see the right game pop up in your 3DS menu, and then you actually play it.
Yeah, yeah. Like the EverDrives have kind of the same problem.
Yeah, yeah, some of them do. And
It's the way of saying, do you really need that many games on there?
Exactly, yeah. And again, like, a lot of times when you're doing something like this, it's not that legal, so, like, who are you going to go complain to? But seriously, it's one great thing about the Sky 3DS card and the R4 card is if you have a 3DS XL, the back of it has some storage for a cartridge or two. You could really just bring these two, have, you know, a few of your backups in the Sky 3DS and a bunch of emulation in the R4 card, and you're good to go for a very long time. Yeah, so that's my quick rundown of emulating on the DS and 3DS with the R4 card and the Sky 3DS.
Yeah, cool. Not something I'm probably going to get into. It's, I don't know why. I've never been real big on like emulating on consoles, really. I don't know why.
Well, I just really like the 3DS, and there are so many DS games that, you know, a lot of them are imports. A lot of them are just so hard to find or expensive now, or you just want to try them out. And then also, I just like having a ton of Genesis and Nintendo games on my DS on the go, mm-hmm. you know? But, yeah, I think we're ready for some game club.
Yeah, so we didn't pick these games, but we certainly can talk about them.
Yes. So Josh and Douglas picked these from Limited Run Games from our interview last episode. So if you haven't listened to that, you might want to pause now and listen to it. But I guess I'll just keep talking.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Since my,
you get the first
since
one, I'm not a big light gun shooter fan.
So yeah, Dynamite Cop, not light gun.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, so Dynamite Cop on the Dreamcast It's the sequel to the Die Hard arcade series, and I really like this game. Some pretty long for the time. Cutscenes, some voices in there. What you're doing is you get to pick between three characters, and you're saving the president's daughter from some kind of pirate gang, I guess. And you're on a cruise ship, you're on a desert island. There's some weird like pendulum, like pit in the pendulum type scene where you're fighting these, I don't kind of, they're not skeletons, but they're dressed up like some kind of weird.
Yeah, they're anyway. Dressed like Karate Kid villains.
Yes, they are. You're exactly right. Yeah. So, a lot of punching and kicking, a lot of simple combos. It's kind of a masher. I had fun playing this. I would definitely recommend it. The combo system's really simple. If you go on GameFAQs, you could get some secret characters like a monkey. If you play through the whole thing on the Dreamcast, it'll unlock a tranquilizer gun from 1980. So I should say that this was published by Sega. Yeah, I guess it's your classic 3D beat 'em up. If I didn't know this was a Dreamcast game, I think this will help people picture what it looks like. If I didn't know this was a Dreamcast game, the second I saw it, I knew it was a Dreamcast game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yes, you know, my problem is every time I hear Dynamite Cop, the first thing that comes to mind for me is Virtual Cop. And it's really hard for me to get past that. Even this time, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a shooter. No, it's right. It's not. It's this like kind of strange polygonal brawler game. Yeah, not really my thing. It's not something I really ever got into.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's like a, you could play through it in 40 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think
it's, if it's an arcade game, right? The idea, like things that maybe started as, things that started with like an arcade style, right? They aren't, they're not gonna be long games, right? Because there's no 16 hour arcade games, right?
No.
So yeah, it's going to be short, and it probably back in the day. So this was released in the arcade when 98,
let's see.
Like that.
You got it.
So something like that. So it was probably 75 cents to start, 50 cents to continue. You probably die every 3 minutes or something, right? So you didn't want the game. If the game was too long, no one ever finish it because you'd run out of quarters. So, I mean, it just can't be a long game. And then when you bring it home, you either have to like add more levels or just kind of accept that it's going to be the same length as the arcade game.
I should say this game was not received well. I didn't realize that. I'm looking right now. A lot of places gave it like a D+ or a 58%, whatever these numbers mean, GameSpot gave it a 6.1 out of 10. IGN gave it a 4.1. I like this game. I think that was really harsh.
Yeah, I think though if you bought this game for like $60, it's kind of a ripoff.
Yes. Yeah, I'll go with you there. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. So not much else to say about this one, but I would definitely say it's definitely worth a playthrough. I'll give it that. But you want to talk about the next one?
Yeah, I'll talk about it a bit. So Chrono Cross, I've played through this at least twice in my life. Once as just a regular playthrough and once as a New Game Plus. So Chrono Cross is like a sort of, I mean, it's like technically a sequel to Chrono Trigger in that it kind of takes place in the same world and has Chrono in the title. And then has some references to the events of Chrono Trigger, but it's a really different game. I mean, obviously it's like a whole generation different. It's at the very end of the, not very end, but it's very late in the PlayStation life cycle that it came out. Some of the same team. I mean, Chrono Trigger had three or four writers. there's kind of one writer from that team who also wrote Final Fantasy VII, that took over Chrono Cross, and he tends to have like the trippiest ideas of the group. So Chrono Cross is a little like story wise is a little bit confusing because it's a game that has like both parallel world and time travel events. So it's to get a few things out of the way, it's a turn-based RPG with like an active battle system. Meaning it's not just like everybody takes turns in the same order. And then there's different kinds of magic, each with like a different color, like for the different elements. And then by like casting magic in a certain order and including like the magic that like enemies cast, you can get like different effects by chaining types of magic. And as a matter of fact, to get like the true, the true ending in the game, you have to like beat the last boss with a specific chain of magic, which sounds easy, except for the fact the boss also casts magic and can then break the chain. So, the thing that, so Chrono Cross takes place in like a world where you're the lead character. Lead character is named Surge, and it's split between two worlds. So like it when Surge is like a kid, he gets attacked by a lynx, not an Atari lynx, but like a lynx on the beach. And then it creates this like two parallel versions of the world, one where he survived and one where he died. And you're traveling between those two, and there's a lot of, even though they have the same town names and stuff, they're different worlds. And it can get confusing at times because sometimes you forget which of the two worlds you're in or which character is from which world. Along the way, you pick up like a lot of party members. So I think there must be, I probably should have Googled this beforehand, 15 or 20 team members. Do you have that list in front of you?
No.
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to look that up here. It's a really, really big crew. And, you go out with, of course, a fixed number at a time. So it's really about, like, what abilities and what, 45 different characters available that you can play as.
Oh.
And you might not get all of them in the first playthrough. That's the, part of the reason for New Game Plus is, like, you can miss characters. Like, there's events that only happen at a certain time, and you can just completely miss characters. So that makes it a little more confusing. And then, again, the tie into Chrono Trigger, without kind of spoiling the ending of Chrono Trigger, it's hard to describe. And I guess if you haven't played Chrono Trigger I like better. Chrono Cross, I think, actually has maybe a better battle system. I'll say better soundtrack just because it's like much bigger and, it's not chiptune. Not that chiptunes are bad. I like chiptunes, but I'm just saying, Chrono Cross has like a full, digitized, full Red Book style soundtrack. It sounds pretty amazing. And, it's a game you can occasionally get cheap. This is one of these games that, when there's like PlayStation stores or like, Square Enix has a Square Enix store. Like, this game will go on sale for $5 all the time. I know because I bought it for $5. I had it on PlayStation 1, and then, like, it was on Vita for, like, $4.99. So I'm like, oh, yeah, why not get it on Vita, too? Because, despite some of the, like, things that are confusing about it, it's like a good battle system, good music. The setting and towns you visit are all really nice. And if you like to experiment with different parties, different characters with, different abilities, clearly you can because there are so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely recommend the game. I mean, you might not like it because it is really a turn-based RPG.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's unfortunate because when I watch a video of this, and like I said, with Final Fantasy VII, I had a blast watching my buddy play it, but when I play stuff like this by myself, it doesn't grab me. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's something I want to like.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, for the era, like, graphically, it's probably closest to, like, Final Fantasy IX, which probably came out within a year. Final Fantasy IX was maybe a 2000 or 99 release, and Chrono Cross was, like, 99 Japan, 2000 America. And the other plus is the New Game Plus mode has, you can play it, like, at double speed.
Oh, so you just power through it.
Yeah. Yeah, basically the reason for doing New Game Plus is, like, if you couldn't get the good ending the first time, or you found out, you missed a bunch of characters. All right, so do you want to tease what our next games are going to be and then do some email?
Absolutely, yeah. So on Facebook, I asked everyone for some suggestions, and I'm picking one right now, Kabuki Quantum Fighter. I'm just going to leave it at that, other than it's on the NES. If you're looking to play it, it is on the NES. How about you?
Well, I'm going to go with Virtual Fighter.
Nice. So if any of our listeners played any game we talked about today, or, you know, emulates on their 3DS or has a Mister or is sifting through Microsoft code, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net or check us out on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net. And yeah, we got a few emails here. First one from Joe T. He's just chiming in that he never really had time to get into Flight Simulator, so he couldn't get into Microsoft Flight Sim from last week. Centipede and its successors are pretty fun, but he finds the trackball controls are a little imprecise for precision shooting.
Yeah. The arcade version of Centipede is so much harder than the home versions, I've always found.
Yeah, but it's, I love how frantic it is, though.
let's see. Majors writes in about a couple topics. Big fan of VHS rips to YouTube. When he was at Babbage's, they used to try and grab the old promo tapes to use as blanks, but they always only seemed to have 15 or 30 minutes of tape, so they were pretty useless. Mm-hmm. And also the quality was off, blah, blah, blah. The quality was often not good. So, yeah, I agree. Like, the tapes that I saved generally are ones that were, like, over 30 minutes long. But, yeah, you would get, it was a weird thing where, like, game companies would send you promo tapes, but they would be so short. And it's like, do they think we have nothing better to do than to change tapes for the in-store demo constantly? Like, I get it. You save a nickel by sending us a 7-minute tape. But just get a 4-hour tape and loop that 7 minutes. Like, then we would play it. I mean, we'd go mad from hearing the same 7 minutes, but we'd at least play it. And if you want stores, so again, people selling to 90s game stores, make your tapes longer.
Yeah, back in time.
Back in time. If you can hear this. I think anything's possible in 2020.
Yes.
So, he also says, talking about East games is never off topic. So there you go. He said he was been a fan since 1990 when he played it on PC and TurboGrafx-16. PC version of East, by the way, at least the one from the 80s. That's a little rough. I actually liked it. I did a review of it for some review game day. And I like it, but it's, yeah, it feels very crude compared to, like, even the Master System version. Which might have been... I can't remember if I played the TurboGrafx or Master System version first. Probably Master System. About the Terra Onion Mega CD, Kritz, Kritzz, the EverDrive. Is that a person, dude, or people? I don't even know.
I think it's a person. I think it's a dude.
They're making a Mega EverDrive Pro, which is a little bit lower cost, $200. And...
it could do CDs.
And can do CDs, yeah. Cool. I was making sure I was reading it correctly.
Yeah, ISOs, yeah.
Interesting. I have not seen this yet.
Yeah, so I Googled it, and it's not released yet, but there's a lot of pictures and stuff that he's been posting.
Yeah, there it is. Pre-production version. It can play CD games without the actual CD add-on. So what I did find about the EverDrive this week, off-topic, is like, you can play Master System games on the EverDrive, but if you have a 32X connected, you get an error. And I know, like, really? You can't connect a Master System converter into a 32X into a Genesis. There's somewhere in the stack, there's some hardware incompatibility. But I thought maybe with the EverDrive, it would, like, figure out a way around that, but I guess not. Going back to the email. Interview with Andrew Plotkin. He's tried a few Zork games, really didn't get into them back in the day, but really appreciates the passion that people still have for them. Did play a couple of MUDs back when he was able to connect to the internet in the day, you know, back when it took effort to connect to the internet. But he was kind of late to the party, and it didn't really hook him as much as the BBS scene. His favorite stage of Dragon Slayer, the final stage. And let's see, compares Flight Sim 4 to Desert Bus. I think that's a pretty accurate comparison.
Sorry, everybody. It's all on me.
Also with Centipede, really hard time playing trackball games. He could never really get mastery of playing with a trackball. It was very fast, and the Centipede changing directions was just too stressful to deal with. In the early 2000s, there was a re-release with Centipede, Millipede, and Missile Command. And he always gravitated towards Missile Command because predicting the path of missiles was simpler. And I have to agree with that. Like, of those three games, Missile Command is my favorite. I think you had mentioned not liking Missile Command on one episode.
I just didn't think it would... I didn't think it needed to be
The remake, yeah.
New game. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Missile Command. That could be my top 10 Atari games. Atari 2600 games. It could be in the top 10, maybe.
That is a good one. That's a great port. All right, moving on to... Robert wrote in an email. He mentions he often listens to reads the show notes, sometimes even before listening to the episode. So that's good to know. Because I put time into it. I don't format it that well, but we haven't gotten any complaints yet. And I think that's actually why I was asking if anyone actually read it, because I was expecting more complaints. That's how, sometimes the font is weird. I don't know. I won't go into it because no one's complaining. But he wanted to mention to me that he has the same Millipede multi-kit that I have, which is Millipede and Centipede plus I think it's High Score Save and a few other mods in there. And it's great. And there's a newer version that also has a Breakout and Warlords on it, which is pretty cool. But Warlords is only single player, which kind of defeats the purpose. If you pick a DOS game, he says we should check out some prepackaged DOS box setups. It kind of sets everything up for you. And sometimes GOG has those packages available. If I don't own it on Steam or GOG, or actually just own it, and I'm doing a archive type org kind of thing, downloading the zip and installing it on DOSBox myself, I actually found that ExoDOS does it pretty well. There's a lot of batch files in there that load it right into LaunchBox, and I use it sometimes, but I kind of like messing with actually trying to get it working.
Oh.
It's another nostalgia thing for me. I actually like playing with the autoexec and config.sys.
Yeah, that is my least favorite part. I agree with this email completely. That if we talk about any DOS games, we should limit it to ones that human beings can play in their spare time. And that, you don't have to relive IRQ and DMA settings.
That's actually why I kind of picked Metal Marines, because a few episodes ago, because it was easy for me to install and get going. And that was Windows 3.1. It wasn't DOS, but might as well be DOS. But yeah, I get it. And then another suggestion he has is a Total Doom conversation.
Conversion.
So conversion.
Yes. Like Chex Quest or whatever it's called. Or something better than that.
I read this email beforehand, and I was combining it with his next sentence, which is his topic idea, which is what free shareware levels or demos would you have paid money for?
Mm-hmm.
So it's freeware, but it's something you would have actually paid money for, you know, like Unreal Tournament demo or, you know, the first Doom level or something.
Yeah, the first Doom level, you, if you wanted to, you could pay for. So we used to sell mm-hmm. that in the store in like an, it came in like these envelopes. I mean, they had art on them. It was just mm-hmm. an envelope, but it was like $4.99 for the first level of Doom. And then it included like a $5 coupon off the full game. So I guess it was essentially free, but if all you wanted was the first episode of Doom, which, you know, if you buy the 32X version, that's all you're getting, right? $4.99 yeah. not a bad deal, yeah.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, offhand, one day this will be, sorry, everybody. Sorry, Hugh, especially because it'll be kind of annoying for you, but one day this will be a Game Club game, 4D boxing in DOS. It was a shareware game, but of boxing.
I know the game.
You know, yeah, I really liked it. I might be the only person, but
it's a pretty good chance you're the only person who likes it. I don't know. I know it's not true. no, I mean, look, games. There are games for everyone, right? And 4D boxing. Mm-hmm. No, I it's better than Fight for Life.
Lastly, he just wanted to mention, he knows times are hard for a lot of people right now, but if, anyone can or is willing to, toss a few bucks towards, a GoFundMe for the American Classic, Arcade Museum in, New Hampshire. So, that'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, arcades, like, people that are running arcades, this is really, really, really hard. Because even as states are starting to reopen, like, your business depends on people coming and all touching the same stuff. You can wear a mask to the arcade or something. But ultimately, everybody's touching the same controllers. And I think people are going to be wary of going back to arcades.
Yeah. And old arcade cabinets already kind of look dirty. Like, they look like they could get you sick.
So. I mean, the point is, like, when I go to arcades, like, I'm a little bit of a germaphobe. I'm more worried about, like norovirus than I am anything else.
Totally.
Yeah. Like, to me, that's the absolute worst virus to catch. And if you have kids, you've had this multiple times, I'm sure. And it's just like, whatever you do, do not touch your face when you go to the barcade until you've washed your hands thoroughly. So,
which some of them, like Galloping Ghost, does that even have a bathroom? I know it doesn't have food or anything like that. Like, is there a place where you can wash your hands there?
Well, yeah, but you're probably just going to wait till you get home. Don't touch your face until you get home. Yeah.
Want to grab this last email?
Yeah. Sorry, I was thinking about getting norovirus now. From Turkey, from Trash Turkey. Or is it Turkey Trash?
Turkey Trash.
No, it's Trash Turkey.
No, Trash Turkey. Yeah. Sorry, that's my fault.
It got, okay. Have you ever had a strange retro game craving out of the blue? He recently wanted to play NHL Hits, for example. Never played the game, doesn't even like hockey. But he even tried to get his 360 set up so he could have something to play it on. Maybe he was just being nostalgic for arcade sports games. strange retro cravings out of the blue.
I think that's my whole life. I think that's pretty much like my motto.
Yeah, I mean, I get a, you know, there are a few. I mean, there's a few games that'll come up. Unfortunately for me, a lot of times it'll be like an RPG. I'll be like really fired up, like, oh man, I can't wait to play through Ghost Lion, right? Like, I never played through this game back in the day. It's got horrible box art, so it must be a good game. And then like a couple hours in, I'm like, oh wait, this is like a 40-hour RPG. I can't do this.
And I think that's also why I hoard ROMs and ISOs, just in case I have an itch to play some weird game that's impossible to find and it's been taken down from archive.org. You know what I mean?
Well, so for example, this did happen to me recently, and that's why I picked Virtual Fighter for Game Club, because I was just like, I don't remember what happened, but I'm like, I think I'm going to play some Virtua Fighter. And I decided to get one of my kids to try it because I figured we'd be pretty evenly matched. I don't really like know special moves at this point. Like I did in 1996 or whatever. I knew all the special moves, but I don't anymore. But I'll talk about that next episode.
Yeah, I still remember the first time I saw that in the Tilt Arcade. Blew my mind.
And he recommends a guest for us. We should try and contact Mike Mika, who has been on other retro game podcasts, and he apparently worked on the Dragon's Lair port to Game Boy Color, which is definitely fascinating to me because that is such an amazingly good port.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely put him in our list of people to contact. Yeah, we have from Zach, we have a social media question. Tell us about the time you rage quit a retro game. Yeah, so Robert A., he rage quit XCOM, Fighting Dracula, another person, Fighting Dracula and Super Castlevania, and Food Fight as well.
Yeah, well, Food Fight gets repetitive after a while, so I could see that you got to a stage where you were just done with that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, someone mentioned Defender, which I have rage quit for sure.
Yeah, those controls on that arcade cabinet, I just could never get them. The buttons instead of the stick.
Yeah, I'm talking about even like ports of it where you have a joystick. Someone says The Legend of Hiro Tanma, because just the difficulty is too extreme.
And all the time in World of Warcraft.
Every time I play Donkey Kong with an 8-way joystick.
Oh, dude, I know. Yes. I have a Donkey Kong cab and it had an 8-way joystick. I fixed that right away because I was like, I really dislike this game. I didn't used to. And that ended up being the problem. And I like this last one, Ninja Gaiden, Eagles, those Eagles.
Have I made it to the Eagles in Ninja Gaiden? I don't know. I don't think I've rage quit Ninja Gaiden. I just haven't really gotten far in it.
Yeah, it quits for you because you die.
Yeah, I die too many times, yeah.
How about the Eagle in Karateka? How do you pronounce it?
I think Karateka.
It's one of my favorite games. I can never pronounce it.
Yeah. Karateka?
Yeah. That damn eagle.
A game that I did thoroughly don't enjoy. Yeah. No, I've played more than 5 seconds of Karateka. Probably not. Are there other eagles in games, though, that have killed me? I got to think about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, generally I run out of lives before I rage quit most games. But there are there have been a few where I've gotten pretty far in the game and then quit because either the story just got ridiculous or... Like, does it count if you're playing a game and the story just gets to be so dumb that you can't take it anymore?
Yeah, I think that counts. Where you're just like, I've had it with this.
Yeah, because there have been... I got to go look back at the list, but like, there's got to have been at least one or two RPGs where at some point I was like, yeah, I'm done. I kind of got that way with Breath of Fire. You know, I was playing that recently and it's like, you're supposed to be the hero, but at one point, you know, you do, who's the drug lord that like blew up an entire plane to take out one rival? The point is, at one point you like blow up an entire city to take care of like one evil person. And I'm just like, why are you doing this? Like you're supposed to be the good guy, right? And I'm like, this is stupid. I quit.
There's, it's kind of a pride thing with me too. I feel like I'm leaving something unfinished, you know? So it takes a lot for me to rage quit something. And, you know, someone mentions, you know, Super Castlevania in here. I definitely rage quit that one. You know, there's just a few that, it's just not worth my time. But I do like that topic of like, it seems like eagles and birds are some of the hardest things in retro games.
Yeah, and bats. I mean, I at one point drafted an article called like my top 10 most hated bats in video games. Because there's just no shortage of bats that you hate. I mean, obviously Castlevania has annoying bats, and Ocarina of Time has ice bats, and Adventure, you know, has, I think, like, the bat that will drop a dragon next to you, you know? It'll steal, it'll be carrying a dragon, and it'll steal your sword and then drop the dragon next to you.
I mean, even Breath of the Wild has annoying bats in it.
Right, like when you're out in the field and it's like the giant swarm of them.
Yes.
Yeah, bats are probably my least favorite video game enemy.
Yeah. If there's an animal in video games you really dislike, email at retrogameclub.net.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think this has gone on long enough. I'm going to rage quit before we talk about more animals that annoy me.
Thank you, everyone, for your feedback. And next episode's the Big 50.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see you guys then.
Look at that. Yeah. Thanks for listening.